Hey, everybody. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this podcast from Forest City North Church. We're a church in London, Ontario. And our hope is that this message that you're listening to will have an impact on your life. I encourage you to grab a coffee, make yourself a tea, sit back, and enjoy this message. So have you ever been part of a conversation that sticks with you? It may be not at the time, you never really thought much of it, but it kind of comes back to you. Last Sunday after church, our youngest son, who lives at home, and his girlfriend, who doesn't live with us, she lives in her home, came over for lunch after church. And it's kind of our typical routine after Sunday morning gatherings like this, as we go home as a family, we have some lunch, and sometimes we have their friends come with them, and we get to hang out and so on. And last Sunday after church, we were sitting around the kitchen table, just the four of us, and we're interacting on the morning. We're interacting on things related to life, work, university, and faith, and so on. And these are interesting moments because you need to understand, my youngest son has no problem speaking the truth at times. Sometimes after a Sunday morning service, he'll go, "Yeah, Dad, I have no idea what you're talking about." It kind of just was like, it didn't make any sense to me. And I'm like, "Thanks, son. I appreciate the encouragement." Or sometimes he'll say, "Dad, you killed it today." Or he'll say something like, "Yeah, that just didn't do it for me today." And I'm like, "Oh, man." So we end up dialoguing on these things and talking about these things, and it's pretty awesome. This past Sunday, we were sitting around and we were talking about just our lives, and his girlfriend, who is this amazing human being, we absolutely love her, and she started talking about a discussion or a conversation she had with two of her girlfriends from university. And it was, you need to know that when she gets excited about something, she goes, "Oh, I got to share something with you. It's kind of random, but it's exciting." And so we all pay attention when she does this. And so we leaned in and she started telling us about the discussion around God. You see, these three university students sat around discussing faith and God and Jesus. Now, what you need to know is that our youngest son's girlfriend, she didn't grow up a lot in the church environment, but she was aware of God, and just recently in the last year or so, her faith has sort of been accelerating and her understanding of God's love for her, and so she's in a discussion with two of her friends that she's known for a long time, and she didn't know that they actually had thoughts about God. And for over an hour, the three of them bounced back and forth on their beliefs and their understanding, and she was so fired up because she was able to share her convictions about faith. Now, you need to know, we were so excited for her, and we were celebrating her and encouraging her and giving her thoughts and ideas of how God's maybe going to open up a door for her in the future to discuss this more and so on and so forth. And the conversation ended, and we went on to listening to music and talking about different artists and so on. Now, Monday morning rolls around, and Monday morning, I land in my office, and I have to put this conversation together today, this talk together, and I've been thinking about it for a long time, and I've been scribbling some thoughts and ideas and reading and so on and praying and everything, and as I was sitting there, I thought, I don't know how I'm going to start this conversation, and then I realized that the conversation less than 24 hours old that I'd had with my son and his girlfriend was the way I needed to start. Because I realized this one simple truth, that the conversation that she had with her girlfriends from university is a conversation that each and every one of us have had at some point in our lives. Or we're having it right now. We're having a conversation at times in life where we ask, does God exist? Who is God? What is faith? Who is Jesus? What is the church? What about this? What about that? At some point in our lives, each and every one of us have got to come to grips with these questions. It doesn't matter if you're a person who grew up in church all your life. And faith in God and the Bible and church has always been in your influence. And you've been under the influence of it. And you go, yeah, I still have to wrestle with it. You know, I've grown up in church all my life, and I've been a pastor for 25 years, and there are still things that I wrestle with when it comes to God. I think think it's imperative of us to wrestle with these things. Or maybe you have not grown up in church. Maybe church is something that you've observed from a distance, or maybe you had a friend or two that tiptoed in church, but you never really did. You too, at some point, will wrestle with the question of God. It doesn't matter if you're a skeptic, an agnostic, an atheist, a theist, a naturalist. It doesn't matter. Each and every one of us will wrestle with this question. Richard Dawkins, who spends much of his life as an atheist trying to disprove the existence of God, even wrestles with this. The people that interacted on our Facebook page this past week wrestled with this question. You go ahead and read it later this afternoon. You will see the conversation back and forth, this belief, that belief. Some saying, I don't believe there is a God because of the cancer that I suffered and the disease that I walked through. He allowed me to go through this, so I do not believe in God. Even some on our Instagram, one person just said, easy answer, there is no God. Is it that easy? Is it that easy? See, I think each and every one of us, as we step back and look at life, we must ask the questions about faith in God. And I don't believe that God is afraid of us asking the questions either. So for the next 7 weeks, we are going to pull back the veil of faith. And we're going to pull back some of our understandings of God. And we're actually going to approach some of the stumbling blocks that we have as human beings about God. And we're going to tackle them and we're going to wrestle with them. But here's the thing that I hope you hear from me this morning, is that you need to know that over the next 7 weeks, we're not going to try to convince you to believe anything. I don't believe that that's my job or my role or our other teaching pastor, Anthony. It's not our job to convince you. But what we want to do is we want to present truths and ideas and thought to cause you to wrestle with these things a little bit. No matter where you find yourself in the spiritual continuum, that you will dive into these things and you will ask the tough questions. So our hope is that it will draw us closer to understanding who we are and who God is, if he does exist and if he does want to be part of our lives. So what we're going to do for the next 7 weeks is we're going to look at topics like God's existence, which I'm going to talk about in just a few minutes. We're going to talk about the Bible. Have you ever thought about this book called the Bible? And what is it? It's a collection of writing written by human beings. What is this? Is it relevant for us? Can we actually follow it? Should we follow it? Is there contradictions in it? Yeah, there is some. The second one is evil and suffering. That's the third one. We're going to deal with evil and suffering. What's up with suffering? What's up with all the things that go on in the world? What's up with tsunamis and so on? How are we going to deal with those things? We're going to talk about science and faith. Can they actually exist in the same conversation? I can't wait to deal with that one. Actually, I'm not dealing with that one. Our other teaching guy is going to deal with that one. I don't know if he's in the room or not. I put his name beside science and faith. Oh, I think I'm busy that weekend. Hypocrisy. Have you ever watched a person of faith say one thing and do something different? It's like, doesn't line up. We're going to deal with that as well. We're going to deal with hell and exclusivity. That should be fun. I think he's doing that one as well. And then I'm going to do Jesus at the end. Now, this series is based on a book called The Problem of God. And it's a book actually written by a Canadian pastor who grew up in Toronto. He now leads a church in Vancouver. He started in 2010. His name is Mark Clark. And I read this book back in the fall, and I got to tell you, it was a fantastic read. I couldn't stop reading it. I couldn't put it down. And when I finished it, I thought, we got to do a series based on a number of these things. And I want to say this, the book is available for you if you're interested in purchasing it. I wish that we could give it away to everybody, but we just can't. And so if you want to go to the atrium after the service, you can grab that book and pick it up for yourself. If you cannot afford the $20 and you're like, I just can't do it, come and talk to me and we'll figure out how to give that to you. But also want to just say that here's the deal. If we give you a book, you have to read it and give it to somebody else. Is that fair? Fair? All right. Let's jump into the existence of God. Oh boy, I didn't realize what time it was. It's okay, here we go. Don't look at your watches, okay? Don't look at your watches. The existence of God. So One would assume that if we were going to talk about the existence of God, you would go where? You'd go to the Bible, right? You would go to the Bible, and yet you would see a description of the existence of God. It would be super clear. But here's the thing. When you go to the Bible, what you need to understand is that the Bible assumes the existence of God. The Bible doesn't try to prove the existence of God. When you read the Bible, when you look at it, when you open up the book, and you open up at Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, you see it very clearly. It says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. It doesn't begin with the setup. It doesn't begin with, and this is how God came into being, and this is who God is. No, it just assumes the existence of God. The Bible doesn't try to prove the existence of God, but through the Bible, we see evidence of the existence of God. And where we see that evidence of the existence of God comes through creation. We see the evidence through creation. Now, we as human beings love evidence, right? We love proof. That's, I think, how we're sort of wired up at times. We watch a show like CSI, or we watch a Netflix show like Broadchurch, or we watch Blacklist or whatever it might be. And we watch these shows, and we are looking for the evidence that proves who committed the crime. And we go through these shows and we watch them. Like, I watched Broadchurch on Netflix. It was a great show. And I kind of assumed I knew who had done it. But the evidence by the end of the show had gone a different direction. I was going on a hunch. I was going on a feeling. I was going on a gut feeling that I thought I knew. But the evidence points you in a different direction. See, here's the thing. Faith and the existence of God is not based on a hunch or feeling or wishful thinking. It can be based on the evidence that proves the existence of God. See, through creation, God has left us a hint of who he is. It's like he's left us a trail to discover him. There's a verse in Romans chapter 1, verse 20. It says this, for ever since the world was created, people have seen the earth and sky. Through everything God made, they can clearly see his invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature. So they have no excuse for not knowing God. For ever since it was created, there is evidence through the proof of the invisible qualities of God. We see it in creation. When we look at creation, we can understand the physicality of it. We can see the trees. We can see the snow that we have to shovel. We can see the water. We can see the rain, whatever it is. We see the grass. But when we look at that, we can understand that there are things about it that are unseen. It's kind of like a human being. When you look at a human being, you recognize the physicality. I can see, the color of your eyes. I can see the color of your hair. I can see how tall you are. I can see qualities of who you are from the physical perspective. But I can also tell that there are things about you that we cannot see. There is spirit. There is soul. There is things about us. I've been with people who have taken their last breath. I've been in a hospital room watching a person take their last breath, and it's almost as if you can see the invisible leave them, and all that is left is a shell. There are physical qualities that we can see, and there is invisible qualities that we can see, and we can see this through creation. It tells us that there is evidence and there is proof of the existence of God. Now, I want to give you two pieces of evidence to the existence of God, and we're going to do this as quickly as possible. The first one is morality. We're going to look at us. What I'm talking about is right and wrong. C.S. Lewis, who spent much of his life as an atheist and then became a follower of God, writes in his book, Mere Christianity, he writes, everyone has heard people quarreling. His movement towards faith and believing in the existence of God was a careful examination of human beings. He began to understand that there was a universal benchmark of right and wrong. What do we see that in? We see that in two things, simple things like fairness and justice. Fairness and justice, okay? Fairness. Think about this when it comes to right and wrong and fairness, okay? New Year's Day, I was with my wife and I spent some time with a family from the church, and they have three little boys, and they're under the age of 7. They're cute little gaffers. They're great little dudes. And the one little guy wanted to show my wife and I his new remote control car that he got for Christmas. It was great. it was going back and forth, you could see the intensity in his face of trying to run this remote control car. And then the one brother, he wanted to try it. And you could see the tension. And then the other little boy wanted to try it. And before you knew it, tension was rising and the toy got put away. I'm pretty sure I heard one of the little boys say, "This isn't fair." Where did that come from? Where did it come from? Fairness. Justice. This past Christmas break, my cousin who lives in Cambridge was in London with his 11-year-old son for a hockey tournament. And when I found out that they were coming, I wanted to go watch because I love watching little kids hockey. It kind of reminds me of when I went and watched my son play hockey. I went and I stood there and I watched, and I was much calmer watching someone else's kid. It was awesome. The intensity inside just was gone. It was wonderful. Now, we were in the middle of a game, and the Cambridge player tripped the London player, okay? And there was no call. No call. You parents who've been on hockey, you know where this is headed, okay? The dad of the London team where the player was tripped lost his mind. He truly lost his mind. He was up at his feet with his deep dad voice, because you got a dad voice when you're playing, watching your kid play hockey. His hands were in the air, and he wanted justice because that 11-year-old boy tripped the other boy. He wanted him in the sin bin for what had happened. And he was letting the F-bombs go. It was epic. I was like, dude, you need to relax. Take it from experience. You need to relax. Not that I dropped F-bombs, but that's the whole other issue. Where did that come from? Where did it come from? See, there is a code written in us for fairness and justice. Where is it that we would utter those words, "This is not fair"? Where is it that we would say, "We want that kid to pay for his crime"? See, there's an unwritten rule. There's an objective standard of truth. Right and wrong. Now, if you don't believe me, okay, and you're sitting here going, I'm not sure about this, this afternoon for lunch, go to Swiss Chalet, and if there's a big long lineup, I want you just to walk to the front. Right? Right? If I was in line at the back and you walked to the front, I can guarantee you my wife would say something. I make fun, but I've never seen the rules on the wall at Swiss Chalet. Thou shalt not cut the line. It's not there. We have this simple understanding that that is wrong. It's not right. We have this basic understanding of what is fair and what is just, but where does it come from? Where in history did we come up with a long list of thou shalt not cut in line, thou shalt not trip my kid, thou shalt share? See, in order to have a logical conclusion, we must understand that there is a moral code giver. And the Christian faith would present that it's God. It's a piece of evidence that God exists because he is righteous and he is holy. Romans chapter 2, verses 14 and 15 says this. Paul's writing to his Jewish brothers and sisters, and he's talking about the non-Jewish people and refers to them as Gentiles. He says, "Even Gentiles who do not have God's written law show that they know his law when they instinctively obey it, even without having heard it. They demonstrate that God's law is written in their hearts, for their own conscience and thoughts either accuse them or tell them they are doing right." Did you pick that up? That even though they don't know the law, that even though they don't know God's standard, there is something within them that proves that it either accuses them or it affirms their choices that it is right. There is something in all of us. Now, it doesn't mean that we always follow it, right? There are still moments where we know that maybe it's wrong to put a balaclava on and go rob a convenience store, or we know that it's wrong to cheat on an exam or a test. We know that it's wrong to take, to abuse a situation or abuse somebody else or devalue human beings. We just instinctively know, but we still do it sometimes. But we step back and we go, where does this sense of morality come from? Now, some push back on this. Some push back on this and say, no. Morals don't transcend culture. It's a product of culture. What is right and wrong for one culture is not applicable to another culture. Some skeptics might even push back even farther and say that morality doesn't prove the existence of God. It's actually an evolutionary development of humanity. Clark, in his book, says that that's what he used to believe about morality. That's what he used to believe about right and wrong, but then he realized philosophically and practically it doesn't make sense. He actually refers to it becoming logically bankrupt. Logically bankrupt. Because if we don't have an objective standard of right and wrong and morality, then what happens when you get cut off on Wonderland or the fairness factor, someone butts line at Swiss Chalet, or if we watch someone abuse somebody else, or if we hear of a child that's been kidnapped, or we hear about a murder somewhere, or we hear about a rape, then we're not able to step up and say that's wrong. If we step back and say, no, culture forms morality, then where do we land on? Where do we come from? Where is the standard in that? Your truth becomes your truth. And then we have, famous people standing up and say, just be true to your truth. Well, what does that mean? Whose truth is truth? We would believe in the Christian faith, and we as a church would believe that this is pieces of the evidence of the existence of God, because there is a mind behind the morality. We have to wrestle with these things. That sense that you have inside of you when you experience something and you go, that's just not right. Well, where does that come from? You must step back and ask yourself that question. So the first piece of evidence is the morality. The second one is the evidence and the proof of the existence of God comes from the universe, the astronomy. Let's deal with that just real quickly because we're running out of time, so we'll rush through this. Creation itself can demonstrate and give us evidence of the existence of God. We saw that in Romans chapter 1, verse 12. It's going to come up in the verse again for your reminder. Creation points us to a thoughtful, balanced approach to things that are constructed. It doesn't come through random design or accident. Have you heard of this phrase, anthropic principle? Have you ever heard of this? Anthropic principle? Some of you might have. I had never heard of it before. So I'm thankful that Clark wrote on this. The phrase helps us understand what scholars call this finely tuned universe in which we live in. Finely tuned. They believe, and astrophysicists tell us, that there's around 122 variables that need to line up in order for the universe to come into existence. And they teach us that if any of those things are off by a millionth of a millionth, that the likelihood of creation and the universe coming to existence is nil, or almost impossible. That there's this idea that there's these dials that have to be perfectly tuned. And if they're not perfectly tuned, they're out by just a millionth of a millionth, then there's no way that the universe would come into existence. It must have been miraculous. And they actually refer to it, it's one chance in 10 to the 138th. So what's that? It's almost impossible. But not only the truth of this coming into existence, that there's a creator behind these things, that there's also this idea of the balance of sustainable life is beyond comprehension. It's miraculous. That when we look at the mathematical numbers, it almost is impossible for this to come. There must be a designer who stepped in, who messed with the system and said, it must be so. And the creation, as complex as it is, and the sustainable life that it is, and the balance that it is, there must be someone behind it, they say. I like what Clark refers to William Paley, a philosopher from the late 1700s, early 1800s. He uses this illustration of walking along a beach and you kind of find a watch and you pull the watch apart and you see all the finely tuned parts of it and it's ticking along so beautifully, you would assume that there was a creator behind it. If someone stood beside you and said, there must not have been a creator for it, you look at them as if there's something wrong. This idea, this anthropic principle, is this finely tuned universe where things come into existence just perfectly and life is sustained perfectly. See, I wonder at times if it takes more faith to believe that this just happened than it does to take the step of faith to believe that there is someone who created it that's behind it for us to live into. There's a mind behind the matter. Evidence of mind behind the morals and mind behind the matter. Now, why does this matter? Like, why? Why is the existence of God so important? Because at the end of the day, you can leave this conversation and go, nice try. Or you can leave and you can poke holes all in it, and that's fine. My son does that, so I'm okay with it. You can walk away and say there is no God. You can say he doesn't exist. So why does it matter so much? Why is it that we gather like this on a Sunday morning, which may be proof in itself that there is a God because you come here every Sunday morning? To answer that question, I realize that it matters because as human beings, we can find our greatest fulfillment in a relationship with him. That we can understand our greater belonging because we understand there's something missing. We know this. We feel it. We sense it, that there's something missing. And we search and we search and we search. But until we come to grips with the existence of God and his deep, deep love for us, that we'll have a true sense of belonging, that we understand the greater picture of what is taking place in our world, that it impacts our understanding of relationships and how we care for the planet. It influences our perspective when we face pain and struggle and difficulty in life. It deals with our how we treat the marginalized and those who are devalued, and it helps us grasp the beautiful wonder of creation in a way that we fall before a God who says, truly you are the one who created this. That we humbly before him worship him for the creation that he's given to us, because ultimately when you see in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, he did it because he wanted us to enjoy it to the fullest and to understand who he is, and that we fall before him in awe and wonder, because if he can write a moral code within us between right and wrong, if he can put the universe into existence in perfect balance, then he understands you and he understands me, and he's completely aware of who we are, and that he desperately loves us, and that through the scriptures, as confusing as it may be for some, we see a truth of a God who crosses barriers and values human life beyond what we would ever value it, and he says, I love you so much, I'm going to come for you, I'm going to send my son for you. This is the God who exists. That we get to step back in awe and not have a blind faith, a faith that's built on hunch or gut feelings or wishful thinking. It's built on the evidence and proof of who he is through creation, that he's left us little seeds of thought that we can know who he is and then know his love for us, and we can step back and we can worship him and have faith in him through his son, Jesus. You know, as Lauren was singing this, I couldn't help but think that, you know, we skim through this idea of the existence of God, and it is tough. There's a lot of questions. And I know that for some of us, you might need all the pieces of this series. And so here's my challenge to you. My challenge to you is, if this is resonating with you and there's something about it, I want to encourage you to be part of all 7 weeks. Do what you can to be here, because I believe that God is going to be able to take this and put it all together for some of us and draw us into the beautiful picture of what he has for us through faith. Next week, we're going to talk about the Bible. And I've been doing some reflecting and thinking and praying about this. And I am super excited about exposing this book in a way next week that I believe for some of us might be a little bit shocking. It may not be what you expect. So come back next week as we deal with that. Let's pray. God, thank you for this morning. God, I pray that you would continue to show yourself to us. We thank you for the beauty and the wonder of creation that is your megaphone that says, I am here. God, I pray that you would draw us closer to better understanding these truths. May we be open. May we surrender to these. In Jesus' name, amen. We'll see you next week.